Kia ora, Tefano. Welcome back to Two Tipsy Plants podcast, where we talk plants and drink booze. My name is Sasha.
And my name is Sasha.
And in today's episode, I just wanted to point out that this is the recording of episode 8. Have you ever... Because we had that idea... Excuse me, I'm talking here, girl.
I think Rosie has something to say as well. Yes, I did expect us to get there, and I expect us to go even further, to be honest. I'm just happy that we did not abandon it halfway.
Nah, I honestly am enjoying just the research of the plants and, to be honest, just talking to you about it.
It is a good way to combine us. It is a good way to combine us talking to each other and sharing our experience and killing a bottle of 2 of wines.
Speaking of, today's episode's choice is actually my choice. Actually, hold on. Did I say what today's episode is going to be about? I don't think so.
I don't think we have mentioned that yet, but it's fine. We can do it now.
So in today's episode, we will talk about Rongoa Roko. We will talk about medicinal plants, some plants where the medicine has actually derived from, and some home remedy plants as well. Yeah, so take notes, but also take everything with a grain of salt, because sometimes things that are used in home remedies are not tested.
Well, whatever is used in home remedies, let's be honest, we don't know if it works sometimes.
Yeah, a lot of it is placebo effect, isn't it?
Sometimes it's placebo effect, but also most of it probably will be dependent on concentrations. Some of the plants are poisonous that are on the list, but dependent on concentration, it's going to be
and the dose, I guess, yeah.
The dosing, yeah. Yeah. Just like with everything, have it in moderation.
That's like the freaking motto of this podcast, isn't it?
Yeah, besides wine, though.
I'll actually start talking about today's wine, because this is one of my favorite wines. It is not a Merlot, which is a wow surprise.
Wow, wow, wow.
But it is a Pinot Noir. Wow surprise.
Well, it is kind of full-bodied Pinot Noir, so I'm kind of...
I think it's mid-body still, but it's a really nice one. So the Pinot Noir that I've chosen for today's episode is the Devil's Staircase from Central Otago. What year is that on the bottle?
Devil. 2022.
I have actually been to the vineyard myself. The Devil's Staircase is a daughter or like a sister vineyard of Shaky Bridge. Mm. And it's beautiful. And apparently Devil's Staircase, there was something about mining and the actual track kept collapsing, and that's why they called it Devil's Staircase. Like, there's a bit of story about it as well.
Fair. It's probably a bit more PC version of what people used to call it.
Yeah. Cool. Tell us a little bit more about Pinot Noir from Central Otago.
Usually what a lot of vineyard managers consider is the terroir, which is where the wine comes from. Mm-hmm. What kind of soil it is and what kind of grape they're growing, what mm-hmm. kind of weather, climate. So terroir-wise, Central Otago is a very great place to grow beautiful wines. It is full of glacial terraces with light and fast draining losses and some gravels. Typically overweathered schist with varying amounts of lime and clay. And slopey terrain is quite a norm in there as well.
I can't remember where the actual vineyards are, but the cellar was right next to a river with like a bridge over it. Definitely that's definitely an alpine river. So yeah.
Would be quite gravelly in there, schisty as well.
Beautiful place though.
Mm, this kind of terrain introduces a lot of minerality to your wine. So that's quite nice. Typical wines to actually grow in Central Otago will be Pinot Noir.
Mm.
And
well, that's why I said surprise, surprise.
As well.
Surprise, surprise. It's a Pinot Noir from New Zealand. Wow. Yep. It is a good one, though.
All right.
All right, Sasha, let's
pour some. Cracking.
And knocking the microphones.
It's fine. I will always be touching it. It's fine. It's consented.
You just like cheers the microphone?
Yeah, that was completely intentional.
Oh, the color is just beautiful, isn't it?
It's divine.
That's why I say that I don't think it's a full-bodied wine. It's still like a medium bodied, but it's like, oh, it smells so fresh and just,
It's a Pinot Noir. Hi. Ooh, smells nice.
Mm.
It smells very easty, like brioche.
Now that you said bread name, yes, I can smell bread now. I love it. It's just
so, yeah, it smells red berry, but very brioche slash mushroom forward. A little bit of something burnt.
I don't know. I smell like mushrooms. Even like vanilla. Yeah, it's very. I don't know if it's my perfume actually.
So Pinot Noir is considered the world's most popular light-bodied red wine, and it's also loved for its red fruit and spice flavors. And yeah, it is also accentuated by a long and smooth soft tannins finish.
I don't know. I love it. It's a great, great Pinot.
I'm just surprised how mushroomy slash brioche slash spicy it smells. Like, it's not...
It smells definitely spicy. I don't know. I can't really smell mushrooms.
It's more like a depth of mushroom rather than...
Yeah, like a damp forest floor sort of. No, it's beautiful. Anyway, would you like to start, Sasha, with today's plants? And
we haven't tasted it yet.
I've tasted it.
I haven't. I was just smelling it. Actually, one of the rare cases when you get what you smell.
Right. Would you like to start with today's plants, Sasha?
Sure. Once again, today we're talking about medicinal plants of Aotearoa. And
not just Aotearoa, but...
Well, we will start talking about that.
Okay.
Today's plant is Kawakawa, Micropiper
Excelsum. Fun fact, I will actually include a couple of deciphering the Latin names of the plants today. Do you know what Excelsum means?
No.
Apparently it means tall.
Tall.
Yeah.
Kawakawa is tall since when?
It could be taller than other pipers, so maybe that's why it's called Piper Excelsum. Yeah. Okay. Carry on, and I'll add on, because I've got...
So macro piper means big piper.
Yeah, but it's a completely different plant. Yeah. Piper is pepper, pretty much, yeah.
So yeah, Kawakawa is a native New Zealand plant with heart-shaped leaves. It has a range of traditional medicinal uses. It is a topical treatment for skin conditions, cuts, insect bites. It is also used as a tea for digestive ailments and to support the respiratory health. Fun fact, what I have been taught by one of my teachers back in university is that because Kawakawa is very good for anti-inflammatory and antibacterial
like it's got antibacterial
applications.
Properties.
Yeah, has properties. He said that the only type of leaf that you need to harvest in order to get the full benefit of that is the one that is eaten already by the insects. So
yes.
The holy leaves.
Yeah, because when an insect bites it, it makes the plant to produce the myristicin, is that what it's called? A bioactive element that actually does have that anti-inflammatory and antimicrobial and insecticide actually as well in it. Yeah. Did you know that Kawakawa leaves, the tonic that used to be produced by boiling the leaves, was also believed to have aphrodisiac properties?
Ooh, sexy time.
Yeah.
Did you know that using Kawakawa bark to make tea can make it hallucinogenic?
So I knew that, but it's not as... So Kawakawa is a relative of kava, but it's not as... It doesn't have as many hallucinogenic properties as the actual kava, the Polynesian kava, has. And funny enough, like I found this sentence that said that possibly when the Polynesian people arrived here, when Maori arrived here, they called Kawakawa that way because it reminded them of kava. So that's why they called, because it's from the same family, it looks very similar, so that's why they called it Kawakawa. Yeah, it still has a bit of, like, I think if you eat too much of it, you'll probably be a little bit like high, but it's not as strong as kava. That's what I read, at least. Yeah. Have you actually tasted it? Have you actually chewed on it?
Yeah, I love kava tea.
I never had a tea, but I've actually chewed on the actual leaves.
Ugh, it's not as
nice. It's still quite peppery, I think.
Well, it's peppery, and that's like, it's not a nice flavor. But for the tea-wise, it doesn't have much flavor, to be honest. So it's quite nice as an infusion with something else.
Do you know that the berries are also edible?
No, I have not.
Berries?
No,
they look, not the look, but like if you touch them, it's the orange long berry. If you touch it, it's just like, I just don't like the texture of it, but apparently the berries are edible as well.
So what I see is you are squeamish about it.
I just don't like, Yeah, like I don't mind eating different textures, but I don't like touching different textures.
Yeah, that's why you have a problem with your Mac.
No, my Mac, I don't have a problem with touching it. I just don't like my fingerprints on it.
Okay.
It's different. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right. The next plant.
Yeah. It's not a New Zealand native, but it's a plant that most people know about. Saffron.
Yeah. It's Benny.
Do you know what plant the saffron comes from? It's a crocus type plant.
Just continue.
So it's a bulb, right? So the crocus flower comes from a bulb. Crocus sativus is the flower where the saffron is collected from. Sativus means cultivated. Because crocus cannot propagate on its own. It is actually dependent on humans to propagate it for a long time now. Yeah. So it's pretty much the seeds are infertile.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
But it's a bulb, right?
Yes. Well, so, no. So it's a bulb and you can split the bulbs to grow more.
Hmm.
But usually your plants can produce seeds as well and the actual seed is infertile. So the bulb can multiply, yes. But you still need to split it.
But yeah, is this the same case with bananas?
Well, yes. Bananas are also dependent on humans too.
No, I mean, they are also infertile, but they are also split by root.
Yeah, but they became infertile. They actually had seeds before.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, back to saffron. Apparently, so do you know what the actual saffron is? Like the actual spice?
It's a petal? No.
Pistils.
Pistil, thank you.
Fun fact, I'll just start with fun fact first. So one crocus flower produces only three of the little saffron pistils. And for every kilogram, which is 2.25 pounds, 150,000 flowers must be gathered. For 1 kg of the spice.
Well, and now you know why it's so expensive.
To be honest, it is expensive, but you also need just like two of the saffron
petals
to flavor anything, like rice or anything like that. It's very strong. So apparently, the early uses of saffron were mostly medicinal. For treating inflammation, asthma, cataract. It feels like all the medicinal plants were used to treat everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like you just take one plant and everything, you can treat everything with it. So yeah, it was used for treating inflammation, asthma, cataracts, even healing hangovers.
Nice. So everything from shits to Viagra.
Pretty much, yeah. So like Alexander the Great, for example, believed that it will heal his battle wounds.
Oh.
Yeah, I think it's.
It didn't work for him.
Yeah.
He's not around anymore.
I think it's it's just because it's so rare. The spice was so rare. It's just the beliefs that people came up with.
I don't think it was that rare. Like, it's still not rare. It's just the demand is high. And
it's not rare now because it's propagated, but back in the day during Alexander the Great.
But people used to color clothes with it.
Yeah. It has also been used to promote desire. Another one of those.
Nice.
So apparently Cleopatra added it to her bath for its color and cosmetic benefits, but also so she can have successful amorous encounters.
So that was like an early version of the fake tan.
Possibly, yeah. I personally really like adding a bit of saffron to my rice, but yeah, now I know it's got aphrodisiac properties in it as well.
All right, let's move on. The next plant is Herakeke, Phormium tenax.
It's got medicinal properties in it. Flax, New Zealand flax. It's also known by New Zealand flax, yeah.
Herakeke, also known as New Zealand flax, has medicinal uses in Maori traditional medicine. It is commonly used as the poultice or dressing for wounds, burns, and skin infections. The gel-like sap of the plant is applied topically to smooth skin irritations. So essentially, it's local aloe.
Yeah, okay.
Aloe. Not aloe.
I know that Tui loves it. The bird, Tui. Yeah. I mean, flax is very multifunctional, isn't it? Yeah, because you can weave with it. You can apparently use it as a medicinal poultice to treat your little wounds and stuff as well. Is that it?
That is it. Mine are quite short just because I am an overachiever, but also underachiever. So I have a lot of plants, but short spills about them.
The next plant that I have is a bit controversial in terms of its medicinal properties, but I thought I'll still talk about it. Ginkgo biloba.
Yeah. She smells.
That's the thing. So he doesn't smell, but she
smells.
Does. the female trees do. So apparently it's the outside of the skin. The seed. The skin, it's like a fleshy tissue and it's quite sticky as well. And that's what stinks.
She have never heard about the personal hygiene.
It actually stinks really badly. So hence, most of the trees that are actually used in landscaping are male trees.
Yeah.
Just so they don't stink like that.
I mean, when I used to work in one of the restaurants in Botanic Garden and we have Ginkgo biloba plant in there, we had to, every season when it's flowering and fruiting, we had to put the sign up. It's not our trash, it's ginkgo.
Yeah. Yeah, it actually smells like trash, doesn't it? Yeah. So apparently, in Chinese medicine, prepared ginkgo seeds thought to restrain lung qi and promote the movement of dampness, therefore effective for breathing disorders, cough, vaginal discharge, and urinary complaints. So I don't know about that, but I've heard some claims that ginkgo is actually good for brain functions. And like,
maybe I should try it.
They actually sell ginkgo extract in like pill form in supermarkets for, you know, memory and stuff. Max actually did buy it once.
I forgot to take it.
The trouble is, it's not. There were studies done on it, on like benefits of ginkgo to treat cognitive decline, and unfortunately, the data that came from those studies, it didn't really support the fact that it does help, because it showed pretty much similar effects to the placebo group. So yeah, it didn't demonstrate significant differences.
Well, that's unfortunate. I need something to promote my brain function.
Yeah. Read more books.
Read more books. You don't have books yet that you can write them.
So yeah, I found it quite interesting. I personally like the tree because it's the only tree from its family with the leaf that looks like that. Because it's not your typical leaf. It's got like a different structure of the leaf.
Well, it is essentially the first variety of the tree that was developed. It's like a very old species.
Mm.
It's like essentially the next after conifers.
Mm. Yeah. So that's the spill on ginkgo.
Alrighty. Before we proceed to the next one.
Ka-ching.
Ka-ching. Ka-chow. Horopito. Sirovintera colorata.
Yeah.
Do you have something about it?
No, I know quite a bit about it, but no, it's not on my list.
Yeah. Horopito is a shrub native to New Zealand. Its leaves contain compound called polygodial. Oh my godial. Which possesses the antibacterial and antifungal properties. It is traditionally used as a natural remedy for fungal infections, such as the candida and Atlas food.
Mm.
And also it can be used for the cooking.
Yeah.
Because it is quite peppery.
Yeah. Similar to kawakawa. The leaves that have, so for those who don't know, horopito, it's very spicy, but also the leaf itself, it's more like an orangey leaf with a lot of red specks on it. So the red specks are the reaction of the plant to insect bites or attacks on the plant. So the leaves that have the most of the red spots are the spiciest ones, similar to kawakawa, because that's the plant's response to the attack or the infestation of the plant. Yeah.
Fun.
I guess any spicy plant helps you to treat like infections and stuff.
Well, honestly, it doesn't taste spicy. It tastes like poison.
No, it's quite peppery. Like if you nibble on the leaf.
Yeah. But that's how I imagine, like, if you have something spicy, if you have something poisonous, that's what it feels like.
Great. It actually is not poisonous because there are some plants, like let's say actually going back to ginkgo, the seeds are quite toxic. So you kind of need to know how to prepare them to make sure that you don't die from it. Yeah. Oh, that's cool. I actually want to go foraging and get some horopito leaves and dry them, have them in my pantry.
Just like a bay leaf?
Yeah. You're more than welcome to join me whenever. Probably not in winter, but you know.
Definitely. Absolutely.
Okay. The next plant that I have, you have it on your list as well.
Manuka?
Yes, Manuka. Leptospermum scoparium. Scoparium means like broom, which I found really interesting because it kind of looks like a little broom, doesn't it? Yeah. So Manuka, also known as Manuka myrtle or New Zealand tea tree, broom tea tree. Oh, there you go. That's where the like broom name comes from, as a flowering shrub in New Zealand. So did you know, it's just a fun, I'll start with a fun fact and then we'll get to the medicinal stuff of the plant. Apparently, Manuka migrated to New Zealand from Australia.
No surprise.
So you know how most of Australian plants, they have adapted to forest fires? So they are actually quite flammable, but during the fires, they release their seeds. So that way...
Don't talk about forest fires. It's the next episode. I have a lot of plants on the next episode about that.
Well, that's fine. I'm just saying that, like, yeah, so Manuka shows similar properties. And most of New Zealand plants are not adapted to forest fires because we just don't get them in New Zealand, the natural ones at least. So, yeah, it is thought that it migrated to New Zealand from Australia.
Well, that's what they should have planted on Port Hills.
Manuka is... The honey made from Manuka is very, very valuable in New Zealand and worldwide, actually. It is produced in both New Zealand and Australia. So honey itself has quite a bit of...
antioxidants and...
Well, just antibacterial properties, just because of
just
the
like
natural...
Every honey.
Just because of the natural hydrogen peroxide that it produces. But apparently mixed with Manuka, it kind of doubles the effects.
There is so much controversy about the Manuka honey at the moment, like about the testing and the limits and the percentages of how much Manuka plants should be in, pollen should be in there. And
well, because there are a couple of agencies that actually control it, isn't there? It's not just one system, it's a couple of systems here.
It almost sounds like an... topic for another episode. I think it's going to be like a very long one.
If you have a sore tummy, having like a tea with Manuka honey in it might help. Fun fact, kakariki, which is the New Zealand parakeet, uses the leaves and bark of Manuka and Kanuka to rid themselves of parasites. They ingest the leaves and bark, but also they chew it up and they mix it with preen gland oil and apply it to their feathers. Which I found really interesting.
Okay, so they don't swallow it and it just like gets rid of their wormies.
Yeah, so okay. It's kind of, it shows you that it does have those properties because even the birds use it to heal themselves. That way.
Shall we eat that on a like monthly basis just to cleanse ourselves?
It's going to sound really weird, but when I had COVID, the second time I had COVID, I kept having tea with Manuka honey just because like my throat was really sore. And honestly... only one day I was really crooked and the rest of the days I was fine.
For a second I was horrified and I thought I'm going to talk about how you were expelling all the worms.
No.
Because of Manuka. Let's continue. Kanuka, Kunzia ericoides. Kanuka is a tree that is related to Manuka and has similar therapeutic properties. Its leaves and oils are used for their antibacterial and anti-inflammatory properties. Kanuka oil is often used topically for skin conditions, cuts, and insect bites.
Okay. Do you know the difference between Kanuka and Manuka?
Kanuka is kind, Manuka is not kind.
Manuka is mean, yes. Sasha, with that phrase, Sasha refers to the actual touch of the plant. They look very similar in terms of like their leaves and the flowers. Kanuka flowers are a little bit smaller than Manuka usually. But they
Different species. Way too similar.
Yeah. So if you touch Kanuka, you can actually sort of brush your hand through it and it won't hurt you. Where if you touch Manuka, it's quite prickly. So hence, Kanuka is kind and Manuka is mean.
The more you know.
Yeah.
I can give you one more plant and that will be the wrap on my Aotearoa plants.
Okay. Yeah. Do that and I'll throw another one of the Aotearoa New Zealand plants on top of it. Yeah.
Kumaraho. Pomaderis kumaraho. Mm-hmm. It is a shrub that was traditionally used by Maori for its expectorant and soothing properties. It is used to alleviate respiratory congestion, cough, and cough symptoms.
I wonder if it's a little bit... like I don't know that plant.
Me neither.
I assume that it's maybe more common in the North Island. I wonder if it has similar properties to like eucalyptus, if it's used for respiratory...
I was about to say that as well.
Yeah. If it's been used in Maori
medicine
to do that. Yeah. Interesting. I actually did see it in my book as well.
Very cute.
Something kofai in it as well, just because the flower is yellow. Because kofai means yellow.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll throw another one from Otero plants to you as well. Do you know what Koromiko is?
It's like Horopito and something mixed up together. I'm like, no.
Do you know what Veronica is?
Yes, it's a creeping plant, right?
No.
Veronica.
They're not necessarily creepy. So a lot of Hebes I actually reclassified as Veronicas now.
Yeah, true.
So yes. In New Zealand, we still call them Hebes, but technically they are called Veronicas. So Koromiko covers Hebe stricta, Hebe salicifolia, and Hebe elliptica. Well, all of them are actually Veronicas, but we'll call them Hebes for the sake of, you know, because we are in New Zealand.
Do they give you heebie-jeebies?
There is actually a Hebe that is called heebie-jeebie. Yes. I did not know that Hebes could have medicinal properties in them, but apparently for early Maori and in the developing countries as well, diarrhea could have been a death sentence. So to ease the symptoms, Maori would chew the growing leaf buds or make them into a soothing tea with astringent properties. Pakeha learned of this as well, that it helps diarrhea, and they started selling the dried leaves as Koromiko cordial or monk's herbal extract. And because it was so popular, there were even knockoff versions of that. Can you believe that?
I'm just still hanging up on the fact that diarrhea was the one way to death sentence.
Yeah.
What a shitty way to go.
Boy. And apparently there was an outbreak of diarrhea that struck Christchurch Hospital in 1920s. Just for our new listeners, we are recording from Christchurch, New Zealand. And the hospital...
Was it another outbreak of E. coli?
No idea, but it's just it was diarrhea... But yeah, it was diarrhea symptoms. The hospital staff were so overwhelmed that they resorted to treating the patients with Koromiko leaves. And another fun fact that I found really interesting. So by the Second World War, Koromiko was used by New Zealand soldiers in North Africa and Middle East. And the New Zealand Army actually initiated trials to test the potential drug use. The Russian Army got interested in the plant as well, requesting seeds from Christchurch Botanic Gardens so they could grow the plants and test it on their troops. Yeah, I honestly did not know that Hebe could have any medicinal properties. It's obviously not all of them.
It looks useless.
Yeah, it's obviously not all of them. It's just the stricter salicifolia and elliptica, but I found it nice. Yeah. I think that wraps up the Aotearoa plants.
For me, definitely.
Yeah. Okay, you go next then. I only have couple more plants on my list, to be honest.
Well, I have 18 more.
Wow, okay. You do like three in a row and then I'll just throw something on top of it.
So yeah, let's start with medicinal plants that have long history in Russian culture. Honestly, if you talk to your grandma, everything that is growing in your garden is going to be used as a tea, as an ointment, or as a fruit, and it's gonna heal you.
Do you know what I'm thinking about? The cucumber... On the...
Oh my gosh, that meme. Back in Russia, we have a meme of an older guy who literally just grows cucumbers and he's like, okay, just eat the tip of the cucumber, don't take it off the plant, and insert it up your anus, and that will give you the power of earth and the energy and the vibes and everything. I'm like, no, no. Yeah. And then they are against gay people in Russia. My gosh, go figure. Medicinal plants have been used both in traditional medicine and in folklore in Russia, and in more contemporary practices. Mm-hmm. Let's start with the first one, which is Ivanchai. In English, it is willow herb. So yeah, Ivanchai, also known as willow herb, also
pretty
known
much
as epilobium.
I just want to say that Ivanchai means Ivan tea.
Yeah, Ivan tea, that's it.
Yeah,
like it's very... Yeah, also known as a fireweed or Epilobium angustifolium, is a popular herbal tea in Russia. It is believed to have various health benefits, including aiding digestion, soothing the nervous system, and supporting the overall well-being.
I like the supporting the overall well-being.
Let's have go some very tea. Generic.
Yeah, but have some tea. You'll be fine. She'll be all right.
What? You're about to die?
Here's
have some
tea.
Ivanchai. Okay, the next one. My gosh. After the glass of wine, I don't think it's going to be pronounceable.
Eleftherococcus centicosus.
What is it?
Sorry. Eleftherococcus centicosus. That sounds like a fucking spell from Harry Potter. Siberian ginseng.
Okay.
It is a well-known adaptogenic herb in Russian traditional medicine. It is believed to enhance the physical and mental stamina, boost the immune system, and promote the overall resilience and vitality.
See, again, another one. Overall resilience and vitality. Have some Siberian ginseng. You'll be fine. You'll be all right.
Yeah. Just mix all of them into one tea and you'll be bouncing off the walls.
Yep. Okay, give me another one.
And the third one is the Radiola rosea, golden rose. It is another adaptogenic herb widely used in Russian traditional medicine. It is believed to increase the energy, reduce the fatigue, and help the body cope with stress. Crassula. It's a Crassula family.
Okay. I'll go next. I only have like two. Oh, actually, no, sorry. I've got three plants left. I will start with another willow, because you've mentioned the willow as well. So, but the actual willow tree, like it's not a willow herb, it's an actual willow tree. Did you know that obviously aspirin is a synthetic drug, but aspirin was actually derived from an element that is called salicin that came from the willows. Because willow's name is Salix. So Salix alba is the white willow that I'm currently talking about.
I had such a brain salicin. Fart. I for some reason thought it's penicillin that you're talking about. I'm like, no. Why willow? It should be potatoes.
No. It's the aspirin. The active extract of the bark is actually called salicin. Obviously after the Latin name of the willow, which is Salix. And it was isolated to its crystalline form in 1828 by Henry Leroux.
And that's why if you want to buy the cheaper headache medicine, don't buy aspirin, buy salicylic acid.
Well, yeah, so salicylic acid is the chemical derived from salicin, and it is widely used in medicine, as you said. And the acetylsalicylic acid, which is the aspirin, is a chemical. So it was synthetically derived, but it was kind of inspired by salicin. It was actually originally synthesized from salicin. I just did not know that, like, a tree, which is just, you know, normal white willow, could be an ancestor of aspirin, which obviously is a widely used medicine in the modern world. If you have a bit of a headache.
Go and eat some willow.
lick a willow bark.
All right, the next plant. Matricaria chamomilla.
Chamomile.
Yes, it is chamomile. Yes. Chamomile has been used for centuries in Russia for folk medicine.
Not only in Russian.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably all around the world and everything. In Russian folk medicine, for its calming and soothing properties, it is commonly consumed as a tea to promote the relaxation, relieve digestion discomfort, and support the healthy sleep.
I don't know about the digestion discomfort, but I personally have a mix that I've done myself at home, a tea mix.
Chamomile, peppermint?
Chamomile, peppermint.
Lavender?
Lavender and green cardamom.
Green cardamom,
yeah. So I got the lavender is the one that I grew myself. It's the English lavender. To be honest, it does help. Like literally, I have some before sleep and you have a lovely sleep. Because I went to the apothecary and I got the chamomile, like the actual flower heads. It's not just the chamomile tea that you buy in a supermarket. It's the actual flower heads. The cardamom, you can just buy it and I just blended it just so it's not the seed, but it's got a bit more. It's like very minty and very eucalyptus kind of. It's very pungent.
Cardamom, I wouldn't call it eucalyptus. Probably closest to anise.
No, I find it very sort of menthol kind of. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. It's very pungent, but it does help. Like literally you have some and you'll have a lovely sleep. But you can buy it in the supermarket. Like a lot of things you can buy in the supermarket and then just mix it all together and Sasha approved.
Both Sasha approved. All right. Plant number 5. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the plant number 5. Sambucus niagara.
Sambuca?
No. Maybe. Maybe that's what Sambuca is made from. I have no idea, but that's elderberry.
What do you mean you have no idea? We've actually covered it in our...
I can't remember.
Episode 5, was it? Yes.
Wait, half a bottle down. You're trying to... you're making me dig into my memory that is already blocked.
So what is it again?
Elderberry.
Oh. Okay.
Sambuca niagara, also known as elderberry, also known as buzina.
I did not know that it's called that.
And that's Russian, what yeah? It was called in Harry Potter in Russian. Buzina polish... magic wand. Buzina magic wand.
Okay.
Elderberry has a place in Russian traditional medicine, particularly for its immune-boosting properties. Elderberry preparations such as syrups or teas are commonly used to help prevent and elevate symptoms of colds and flu. I used to have it as a child as the cough medicine. Cough syrup.
Is that what Dr. Mom's made out of? I wonder. That's Dr.
Let's check. It's like local... Whatever.
I don't know. I don't know if it's local, but Dr. Mom is like pretty much a cough syrup. That's like a go-to cough syrup. Call it that way. Yeah, because it's just the taste is so distinctive, isn't mm-hmm. it? I just wonder if that's what it's made out of.
Nope. It has piper. Okay. It has piper cubeba. It has aloe. Yeah.
So it doesn't have elderberry in it.
No. Mm, okay. And menthol.
Right. My next plant, we've actually talked about this plant before on our podcast in the Plants in Mythology episode.
Ambrosia.
No. Digitalis purpurea. Do you remember what it is?
Loading. Processing. Arrow 404.
Foxgloves. Mm. So... I think I've mentioned that foxgloves are actually super duper freaking poisonous to you.
Also, can you insert over here when I'm saying arrow and processing and everything, the modem sound?
I'll try. So, as I've mentioned before in that episode, foxgloves are actually super poisonous. But then coming back to the topic of everything in moderation... due to the presence of cardiac glycoside digitoxin, the leaves, flowers, and seeds of this plant are extremely poisonous to humans and some in animals, and can be fatal if ingested.
Is it because it gives you cardiac arrest, since it has the cardiac in its name?
Yes, but the fun fact is, extracted from the leaves, the same cardiac glycoside digitoxin is used... as a medication for heart failure. Coming back to, as I said, like, you know, everything in moderation. So
too much will kill you, not enough will heal you.
Yep, so please do not use it yourself. It's what I'm trying to deliver is the medicine is actually produced from foxgloves to help with heart failure.
Mm. Well, that was fun. All right, my next three plants. Calendula officinalis.
Ooh, calendula. It's very good for your tummy. That's what I know.
Also commonly known as a marigold.
See, that's a common name, but it's so misleading because marigolds that are sold in New Zealand are not calendulas. They are different marigold plants and they are not edible. Because calendula is edible, but not the marigolds. Hence, it's so confusing when calendula is also known as marigold.
Yeah.
Hence... like every time you hear a common name, ensure that the Latin name is actually what the plant is.
Also, it's funny enough that most of the Russian names for the plants are actually Latin names, but shortened. For example, the next plant. Oh, sorry. First, let's finish on calendula.
Yes, please.
Calendula has been traditionally used in Russian folklore medicine for its antiseptic and wound healing properties. It is often applied topically as a salve or infusion. Mm. For an oil to promote the healing of minor cuts, burns, and skin irritations.
There is a local company that makes creams, and there is a calendula face cream that they make, and it's amazing. It's not cheap. It's not cheap at all, but it's really good. Like, it does help, like, if you have, you know, like, little, like, I pick my skin a lot, unfortunately. It's just the habit that I have. And if you actually apply it onto your skin, it does help you heal.
Yeah, when I used to be a child, as we all were, I used to have a problem with dermatitis.
Yeah.
And calendula extract creams.
Calendula. Sorry.
Hannibal calendula. Calendula extract was used as creams, topic creams, and it was quite nice. And
I feel like it's soothing as
hydrating,
well.
Hydrating,
like
soothing. Like it relieves
stops,
you from the itch.
Yeah, it stops the itching. Yeah.
Yeah. Next plant I have is Melissa officinalis.
I know what it is, but I can't, like, I know the name. What is it?
Lemon balm.
Oh, yeah.
Also known in Russian as limonnik.
Well, pretty much what it says is lemon-like.
Lemon balm is known for its calming and relaxing properties. It is used to relieve anxiety, promote sleep, and soothe digestive discomfort.
I feel like anything that has like a strong cooling smell to it helps
relieve the digestive discomfort.
Oh, I feel like it just helps you to calm down as well.
Mm. I will skip on one of the plants because I actually dedicated the whole paragraph to it because it's such a big part of Russian culture.
Is that valerian?
No, actually, I did not do that, but the other one.
Oh, I didn't do valerian just because I thought that you would touch on it, but it's okay.
Unfortunately, valerian did not give me a consent, so I could not touch it.
Okay.
Urtica dioca.
Expelliarmus!
Protego. It's nettle.
Okay.
Crapiva. Nettle has various health benefits and is used as a diuretic for detoxification and to support joint health. It is also rich in vitamins and minerals. Also, during the war times, Russians have used it as one of the ingredients for soups.
Yeah, actually, nettle in a lot of countries, different nettles in different countries, but a lot of nettles are used as medicinal. In New Zealand nettle, you can eat it as well, but New Zealand nettle is absolutely, it just burns you so much. It burns you much more than the Russian nettle. I've actually had an encounter with it. I was wearing socks and then pants over it, and I brushed my ankle over a nettle, and it got through, and it was burning for like an hour. It's
I found poison ivy, like actual poison ivy that you'll get like a contact dermatitis from in New Zealand. I didn't know that that's a thing here.
Yeah.
The very typical one, Allium sativum.
What did we say sativum is?
I forgot.
Cultivated. So I'm assuming Allium sativum is onion.
No.
Is that onion weed?
No.
What is it?
Garlic.
Oh, okay. Well, close enough.
Cause onion is not the only allium.
Well, onions and garlics are from the same allium. Allium or allium?
Allium.
Family. Yeah.
Garlic is well known for its antimicrobial and antivampiral and immune stimulating properties. It is used to support cardiovascular health, boost the immune system, and aid digestion.
Okay, story time from Mother Russia. When I was in kindergarten, and I'm sure you had the same freaking thing. So during winter, when everyone was sick in the kindergarten, I think it was my grandma or granddad. You know the Kinder Surprise?
Yep.
The little egg? Yep. Inside, when you had a toy inside, it comes in like a little plastic capsule.
Yeah.
So what our parents / grandparents would do is they will take a needle and they will punch a couple of holes through that little capsule. They will put crushed garlic into it. They will make...
Not like minced, but like crushed.
Yeah, so it's still a clove, but it's just crushed a little bit so it actually smells like garlic. Make a necklace out of it, put it on your neck and send you to the kindergarten. So all the kids in kindergarten pretty much stunk.
Like garlic. I mean, it is not a silly idea, and it's great idea. Unfortunately,
I mean, if you have a vampire invasion, yes.
No, I mean, like, yes, garlic has antimicrobial properties.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Not to that extent to ward the viruses away.
It's just funny how every single kid in our group had one of those talismans going that way.
Abirigi.
I'm actually happy that I wasn't the only one. I'm happy that you had the same
like,
experience.
When
as
you
well.
Just started talking about like garlic and kindergarten, I'm like, Kinder Surprise.
It's like PTSD. Okay, I'll throw one plant that is on my list. The last one that is on my list. It's actually also known as tea tree, but not the New Zealand tea tree.
Did you know that tea tree is poisonous to dogs?
It's actually poisonous to humans as well if you have too much. So everything in moderation.
No,
again.
I mean, like, as in, it's highly toxic to animals because it causes the seizures and mental deterioration.
The Australian tea tree, is that the one that you're talking about? Like the tea tree oil?
Tea tree oil.
Yeah. Melaleuca alternifolia. Alternifolia means leaves that alternate, which kind of is self-explanatory.
What does it alternate? As in shape, color, or...
The placement on the stem. Okay. Just alternates, yeah. It actually is kind of a home remedy from Russia as well, because my grandma always had a tea tree oil bottle. It was quite a long bottle with tea tree oil in it that she used on any of the skin abrasions that we had. Yep, and it was held in a fridge, just like half of your freaking first aid kit. It always lives in the fridge. Like instead of, you know, the eggs compartment, you have medicine in there.
All the ointments and everything, yeah.
Even pills sometimes.
Pills, creams, everything is there.
Yeah. So I did not know that. But
Which also makes sense because if you go to a pharmacy, everything is in the fucking fridge. And we usually keep it, us as a regular people / plebs, keep it in the tin container probably, as most of us do from the old cookie thing.
Yeah. So it's not related to New Zealand tea tree genetically. It grows along streams and swampy places in Australia, and it is endemic to Australia, to Queensland, southeast Queensland and north coast and adjacent ranges of New South Wales. The tea tree has been used as a folk medicine treatment among Indigenous Australians of Eastern Island areas who use tea trees by inhaling the oils from the crushed leaves to treat coughs and colds.
Same as eucalyptus, probably.
Yeah, and they also used to sprinkle leaves on wounds and make it into a poultice to treat the skin abrasions. However, there isn't much proof that tea tree oil actually helped medicinally. And a lot of people actually speculate that that is a placebo effect. Because I know that it is, like, you can buy creams from, you know, supermarket or a pharmacy with tea tree oil in it. I personally just like the way it smells. But yeah, it's not, might not be as helpful as we thought it was. But as you said, if ingested, tea tree oil is toxic with serious side effects, including coma, and may cause skin irritation if used topically in high concentrations, which is really funny. Like if you use a little bit on your skin, it's supposed to help you heal. But if you use too much, it can burn your skin pretty much. It can give you a chemical burn. As of 2006, no deaths were reported in the medical literature. So yeah.
All right. Well, yeah, please be careful with your tea tree oil, especially if you're using it in your diffusers. It will kind of damage your dog or animal.
To be honest, any essential oils need to be used with such caution. People don't realize that essential oils, because the concentrate is so strong, you really should be very careful with that in your diffusers. But even on your skin, there are people who put essential oil concentrate straight on their skin.
Yeah.
It's dangerous.
It's a roller. Yeah.
Yeah. No, like if it's diluted, it has to be diluted in carrier oil, like, you know, just olive oil and stuff, which is fine. But if you use straight up essential oil, that's dangerous as hell.
Right. The next one is Salvia officialis. Have you noticed how many officialis was there?
It's the official.
Uh-huh.
Actually, can you pass me the book while you read it? I want to have a look what officialis mean.
There you go.
Yep.
Salvia officialis, also known as sage, also known as a shelfie. Sage is...
Shelfie. I like how you said it, yeah.
Sage is valued for its antimicrobial and anti-inflammatory properties. It is used for sore throat relief, as a digestive aid, and for its beneficial effects on the respiratory system. That is salvia.
It's also used in cooking a lot.
Yeah.
Sage.
Yeah, sage. That's sage for you. Also, it's very used profusely to exterminate the evil spirits.
Ah, do you know what officinalis mean? Sold in shops, hence denoting a useful plant.
Okay, so everything that says officinalis is essentially usable.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love this book. I've got this Latin for gardeners, the RHA's Latin for gardeners books. Damn, love it. Absolutely love it.
Echinacea purpurea.
Echinacea, yeah. The cornflower?
Yeah. Ichinatse, if you say it in Russian, purple cornflower. Cornflower?
Cornflower, yes.
Echinacea is used to support the immune function and prevent or reduce the severity of colds and respiratory infections. It is believed to enhance the body's natural defenses.
I don't know how true all the qualities of medicinal qualities of the plant are, but I personally love it. It's a perennial plant. It grows in New Zealand. You can grow it in New Zealand. It looks absolutely stunning if you plant it among like carex grasses or just like tussocks. Just because of that purple flower, if you plant it in the carexes, which are usually orange, they just stand out so much.
And it also looks like gazania.
Slightly, but the actual seed head where the seeds are, it's very firm and very spiky. And in winter, the seed head stays on the plant. So if you actually plant it among your grasses, evergreen grasses, it still gives a bit of a feature to it, even though the plant is dormant, but is there still a feature there? I personally absolutely love echinaceas. Once I finish designing my own backyard, they are going into my garden. Bees love it as well.
All right. Tilia cordata.
Fun fact, we were talking about tilias today with Max because he was reading an article on stuff because tilias grow massive.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently there was a dispute between either Christchurch Council or Christchurch Council or City Selwyn Council, where like the tree was protecting, but it was shading the whole freaking house. Yeah, sorry, just a random thing, but yeah, we were talking about it today.
Yeah, Tilia cordata, also known as linden or Lipa сердцевидная. Linden is a tree with a heart-shaped leaves and fragrant flowers. In Russian folklore, linden is considered a sacred tree associated with love, protection, and harmony.
Obviously, because it has heart-shaped leaves.
Linden tea is believed to have calming properties and is used to promote relaxation and relieve anxiety. I've been drinking a lot of linden tea when I was... Not Lipton tea.
Lipa?
Linden, da. Linden tea from... Not from leaves, but from the buds. Because if you remember... They're sticky, aren't they? It's very freaking sticky.
I guess hence, lipnuť means to stick to something. So lipa, I guess that's where the name comes from. Yeah.
Sticky.
Okay, maybe give us one last plant.
Let me just choose one then.
Yeah, choose an exciting one.
Plantago major.
Plantago, the climbing plant.
Plantago major. Подорожник.
Oh, what is it called? Is it called plantago in English?
Plantago major. Plantain.
Plantain, that's right. Yeah.
Plantain is used in traditional medicine for its anti-inflammatory and wound healing properties. It is commonly used as a poultice or infusion for skin irritation, insect bites, and minor wounds. Plantago major is a perennial herb that is widely distributed through Russia and other parts of the world. It has been...
It grows in New Zealand as well. It's called broadleaf plantain. Because just plantain is the banana.
Oh.
Yeah.
True. So yeah, подорожник, that's the name of the plant in Russian, translates to the traveler or the wanderer. This name reflects its association with healing properties for various ailments and its prevalence along paths and roadsides.
I am actually surprised that it's not related to the calla lily because it kind of has the same, it's the leaf and then the flower head grows in between the leaf, you know what I mean? Mm. Yeah. But again, story time. If you would hang out outside in your neighborhood, let's say with your friends, right? And then imagine you're like playing.
You're a child, you fell.
You're running, yeah, you trip over a rock and then you fell and you hit your knee.
Scuffed your knee.
Yeah. And what we would do is we would find a broadleaf plantain growing. We would rip the leaf off, we would spit on the leaf. And then put it where your little abrasion is.
Well, that would do shit fuck all, to be honest, because in order for it to at least work somehow, you need to crush it a little bit.
Yeah, but that's what we used to do, though. But
that's what we used to do.
Yep. There is even a meme where there is a Russian passport, someone puts a broadleaf plantain on it, removes it, and the passport becomes American.
Yes, Russian passport needs healing. And the last one.
So she's like, I can't have more. I have so many.
I have so many plants.
Hypericum perforatum.
Sounds familiar.
St. George Wort.
Oh, yeah.
St. John's Wort.
Yep.
Also known as Zveraboy Obyknovenny.
Yeah, it doesn't ring a bell.
Zveraboy Obyknovenny in Russian means fights animals.
Yeah.
Commonly.
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 Usually.
Usually.
No, typical.
Typical.
Typically fights animals.
It is a yellow flowering herb known as known for its antidepressant and mood stabilizing properties. It is traditionally associated with the summer solstice and has been used in Russian folklore to ward off evil spirits and bring good luck.
It is used worldwide as well as a medicinal herb.
Translates to beast slayer, actually.
Beast slayer.
Or a hunter of beasts.
Cool. Well, that was very knowledgeable. I do not want to get sick anymore because I do not want all these plants trying to heal me.
Well, that's a wrap on Two Tipsy Plants. Thanks for getting tipsy with us today and joining in our plant-loving shenanigans. We hope we have inspired you to grab a glass or two, or maybe a bottle of wine or whatever the poison of your choice you have, and give your leafy friends some extra loving. If you would like to help or support our podcast, feel free to follow so you don't miss out on our next wild and tipsy adventures.
And also feel free to share with your other plant enthusiasts. We would highly appreciate it.
Keep it green. Keep it tipsy.
Keep it tipsy.
Keep it tipsy.
Keep it tipsy. Just keep it tipsy.
And outro.